Welcome to the Go Health podcast. I am Gillian Strain. I'm Chief Exec of Go Health, and we are an organization which works alongside churches with a vision to see flourishing communities made up of flourishing individuals. And I am delighted that you are all here. So welcome, welcome, welcome. It feels like autumn is really hitting today. There's a weather warning today where I live as I record this brand new episode. So I invite you to grab a warm drink, settle back, and enjoy the conversation. In the Go Health community, we are deep into an exploration of burnout, how to recover from it, and how to avoid it. And today we have a very wise voice to bring into our conversation. Dr. Sarah Horseman is the Warden of Sheldon, a community dedicated to helping burnt out Christians recover and heal. And she has a great deal of experience in lots of things, but includes trauma recovery and understanding of, what should I say, the complexities of church life. Would that cover it? So Sarah is a really wise person, and I'm excited to spend time with her in conversations. Sarah, welcome to the Go Health podcast. How are you?
Good, thank you. Yes, we didn't have too much breeze down here last night in Devon, but yes, a little frisky.
So autumn is here, huh? So can you tell us first, Sarah, what is Sheldon? What does it do? Where is it? And what happens when I get there?
So Sheldon is physically, it's a cluster of converted farm buildings. So it goes back to sort of a medieval farmstead on the edge of Dartmoor, 10 miles from Exeter in beautiful Devon in the Teme Valley. It's not bad for public transport in terms of mainline railway and that sort of thing. And we live as a community here. So there's a small community, a lay community who live here, make Sheldon our life and our vocational work. And we're assisted by a team of staff and volunteers. And we have about, lose track, but it's about 35 beds here. And so at any one time, there might be anything between sort of a dozen people and 40 or 50 people on site. One of the really nice things about it is just the way Sheldon just seems to absorb quite a lot of people. So at the moment, we're completely full and it's incredibly quiet around the place, partly because they're on a silent retreat. And so people come here for three main reasons, or in three main categories of guests, if you like. That's different from the reasons that they're coming. So we have quite a number of self-contained individual units for private retreats. Then we run our own program of events. So there's lead retreats and our R5 read, rest, retreat, relax, recuperate weeks. And then we have groups who come and use our premises. So last week we had the Exeter ordination retreat. So that was the deacons who went off to be priested at the end of the week, which we always love having. And there's various other groups who come here, like there's a women's recovery group, there's a Tai Chi group, there's a couple of parish groups. So they tend to be at the weekends and we tend to be running our own events midweek. So it's a very mixed place.
I'm curious about, you said there's a sort of live-in community. How does that work, and how do their lives get involved with the ministry that you're engaged with there?
Well, those of us who live here as community, we are the people who are doing the ministry. That is what we're here for. So it's not as if we're sort of like one removed and the ministry is separate. So we're not a life vowed community, but those of us who have been here quite a long time seem to have been here pretty well for life. So we've very much developed and grown up with the organisation. So our founder was Carl Lee, who originally set up the charity. And he's now moved from being warden to being the lay chaplain, as I've sort of stepped into the role of warden.
So why did Carl set it up? What need did he see within the world that the Sheldon originally tried to answer, and perhaps still answers today?
Yes. So our focus is very specifically for supporting people in Christian ministry. So that's people in ordained and or full-time ministry, people who are married to people in ordained or full-time ministry, and people retired from. So that's the main focus. Quite a lot of what we do is open to everyone, but in practice, you know, quite a high proportion of our guests are in ministry in one form or another. And when he first came to Sheldon 40 years ago, when it was much more of a sort of youth retreat and education centre, he just found that he was meeting many, many people who were in the position of leading. So they might be a clergy who had been leading a youth group for the week and come in and pay their bill on a Sunday afternoon. And he's the sort of person who people tell their stories to. And he was just seeing repeatedly people who felt isolated, who felt lonely, who didn't have anybody who understood what they were doing, what they were about, and were clearly quite isolated in ministry. And sometimes because there were beds at Sheldon, people in senior positions would have somebody who they didn't know what to do with and would just sort of say, oh, go and spend a few weeks at Sheldon. And so he started saying to senior people, you know, really it's time that actually there was something more specifically geared towards supporting clergy, particularly when, you know, they get sick or burned out or have some sort of life crisis. And the response he sort of kept getting back was, well, no, thank you. Don't particularly want to touch that with a barge pole. Not that kind of worms for us. Why don't you do it? So he did.
And over those years, you've been around a long time. Briefly, has that need changed? It sounds like that's what you're still doing.
We're very, very much what we're still doing. I mean, our core purpose has been very, very consistent throughout those years. I would say the environment in which we are working has changed. So, so over the last 30 years, the patterns of ministry have expanded enormously in terms of the different shapes and patterns who's doing it and how they're doing it. So that seems much broader. And we've tended to just try and develop in response to the needs that we see.
And responding to the world. And later I want to get into that. But first, can we just get into burnout a little bit? Can you talk a little bit about what burnout is, what the signs and symptoms are, and so how you're seeing that emerge with people that are coming into Sheldon?
It's interesting because it's not really a term that I personally would use very much in a specialist sort of way. I mean, when we first started, sort of nervous breakdown was just people understood what you meant, and it feels quite an old fashioned term now. Exhaustion is a good term, but people think it just means a bit tired, don't they? And actually to become down to your bones exhausted and unable to function. I mean, there's really sort of colloquial terms like kiss the concrete, you know, in other words, you just fall and flat on your face, which actually sometimes I really like. So burnout, all of these sort of things is just when you become unable to function in your normal way. And there can be many components of that. So that there may be the mood aspect of it. So people might be quite depressed or quite anxious, just unable to function, unable to make decisions, unable to cope. And again, it's like, what do we mean by unable to cope? Well, we all know when we're in it, things that normally you do cope with, that are normally just okay and you just get on with, they become overwhelming. And so people are very often feeling overwhelmed by the scale of what's in front of them, and feel that their ability to respond, to think, to do, to get out of bed, to motivate, to be creative. Very often people's thinking and patterns become very rigid and very stuck, and actually problem solving in complex situations requires a level of creativity in your mind. Those are the sort of things that the experience of being human and coming to the end of your piece of rope is like.
The experience, I love your experience of being human. I love the term burnout as well. Like in my head, candles burning at both ends and people sort of going up in flames, because often it's the caring professions in particular that give themselves and end up experiencing burnout. In your personal experience, is this something that you've had experience of? And if so, could you tell us a little bit about that experience and maybe what you learned from it?
Well, I refer to it as my in-service training. So,
yes.
I mean, I kissed the concrete fairly thoroughly. It was about 25 years ago now. So I got it in early. I always remember somebody very wise saying to me when I was just making a complete hash of the entire effort. And he said, those of us who have the temerity to think we can help others need to know that it's not easy, because if we believe it's easy, then we can be dangerous. And I've remembered that for so long, because it is messy. You know, I mean, for goodness sake, I'd written this nice little book when I was, you know, in my early 20s, you know, and thought I knew everything, you know, about, you know, living with stress, you know, the church leaders. And interestingly, when I went back, and I couldn't read it for about 5 or 10 years after I had the breakdown myself. And when I went back and read it, I thought, well, do you know, I know that I didn't know that at the time that I wrote it, certainly not in the way that I know it now. So I think there is those different levels of knowing, isn't there? There's the level of knowing at a head level, at a sort of an understanding and a second hand level, and there's a much deeper knowing when you've trodden a bit of the territory yourself. I hope it enables me to be more compassionate, because we're quite good at victim blaming in a way, aren't we? Of like, well, if you're not well, it's your fault, and if you haven't done your self care properly, it's your fault, and if you're not getting better quick enough, it's your fault somehow. You're not being resilient enough. You're not doing it right, and all of that sort of thing. That's quite painful to be on the receiving end of, isn't it?
Absolutely, hugely. Thank you for sharing your story. It just adds a depth of wisdom and care and compassion, as you said, to those coming to you, as well, with their own chaos of often, I guess, of the burnout experience. And if it's okay, I'm going to stick with the language of burnout. I know you've sort of highlighted
fine.
You know, the different ways to approach it, but it's just simple for my little brain. Yes. We'll stick with that. Sarah, can I move on to talking particularly about Christians involved in lay and ordained ministry that are coming to you with what might appear to be burnout or emotional exhaustion or lack of empathy or however is showing itself? Have you seen changes in why Christians are coming to Sheldon with burnout, particularly in the last 5 years, with everything the world's been through? We've done Brexit, COVID, climate change. There's so much going on, plus changing in church.
So I do think that that the last few years have made almost just everything more difficult. Everything that was there at the baseline is exacerbated by multiple major existential things that are going on. And I think, sort of going back to 2016 and the Brexit vote, I think that was the first time that we'd really been exposed in such a vivid way to the politics of division, and that being weaponized against us as communities, and it becoming really impossible to have conversations about certain things, because it was, you know, it was about the taking sides. It was about, remember that day when Michael Gove said, you know, we've had enough of experts, and you just sort of think, well, you know, we spend our lives trying to develop expertise in so many fields, and to trash and disrespect that, and to think that, you know, one person's opinion is as good as another when it's completely uninformed or inexperienced or without wisdom. It's put us into it feels to me a very unfamiliar environment. It feels like that really sort of shook a lot of the foundations of what. Of our collective, is it called the social construct of reality or something like that? I think it's called. It's that shared understanding of who we are and what we're about. started to be very undermined. And I'm sure it didn't start then, but it feels like that was quite a defining moment for us.
And that's what clergy were talking about when they came to you, this sort of shift, do you think?
I'm not sure. It's hard to remember back. I don't know whether people were talking about it. I think what I'm thinking about as I speak with you is trying to analyze and understand why these things have made it more difficult. And I don't know whether we articulate them very, very much. But that feeling of you had to pick sides, and that being a good person meant being on the right side and being part of the right tribe. And I mean, we've done that quite damagingly in church for some time, I think, but it sort of just ramped it up an extra notch and made it somehow more acceptable
That's really interesting. It's a rise in tribalism almost.
I think churches as a
response to the world.
Well, I think we're not separate from it in that sense. And when we undermine that social fabric, I think it's very hard for us within our church communities to somehow be separate from that. We have to work harder to maintain belonging for everybody. And I don't think we're doing that terribly well in church actually at the moment, really. Okay. And particularly for people who are, gay, lesbian, trans, yeah. Particularly for people who are disabled, particularly who are people, we still regard misogyny is as acceptable in ways that are just quite extraordinary. And so when all of that becomes more normalized, it just makes everything else harder. And I think the church has had quite a poor pandemic, really, because the initial response was so shut down, infantilized, you've got to do exactly this and not do exactly that. And then the next wave, it was like, well, we're not going to tell you anything, it's all down to you. And actually, why haven't we been able to talk about the basic principles of, that everybody's life matters? How did we get to talking as though 50,000 excess deaths a year was just trivial? How did we get there?
So with this, you might call it, it's not your words, but as I'm listening to you, sort of clash in values between the senior leadership of large churches and those at the coalface. One of the symptoms might be how people in ministry approach how they do the ministry. So their theology of work. I often hear a theology of martyrdom, right? Mm. So I've got to work. And how many funerals have you done? That's nothing. I've done twice as many. And, I've grown my church this much and I don't sleep any, And that's the theology of martyrdom. And it's really, in some ways, it's brilliant because you can measure how hard you're working because you can measure how tired you are. Or maybe a theology of blessed. I'm so blessed to do this. God's so good to me. And you see it quite a lot on social media. So blessed. I'm a priest doing all this, which in some ways might shut down any ability to say, I'm having a rubbish day. I'm struggling. Because how do you square that with I'm so blessed? So these theologies of ministry and, what I might label it, other people would call it, seem to be a symptom of working in this difficult environment, but also might be, a way to work in a more healthy way if we get a better theology. I'm really curious about what theologies of work, ministry, you hear and whether Sheldon, does it have like, this is a better way to work? Or do you help people just find a better theology because God loves them and wants us to flourish?
Yeah, that's fascinating. I tend to be a little bit nervous talking about theological language because I'm not theologically trained myself. But sometimes one of my roles, if I'm speaking one-to-one with somebody, is to bring those sort of things to the surface. Did you hear what you just said? I wonder what sort of God that means you believe in. Is that the sort of God that you believe in? Is that the God you believe in for other people, and just not for yourself? So I think that's what formation for ministry should and needs to be about. Very often is about how you inhabit this quite. It is a blessed and a blessed space, and it is a gifted space, and it is a complex and difficult and interesting and challenging and rewarding. And so it's a many things space. And everybody needs to find their own place within it. And is it Dan Siegel does a nice thing about talking about the river of flexibility between the two banks of rigidity and chaos. And when we get too chaotic and without enough banks, then, you know, our river just overspills. But equally, if we're too rigid, then we can just have like almost like a straight down flood without that sort of creative river-like flow, and finding that within us. And people use different metaphors. So sometimes, you know, the metaphor of the river is good for some people, and sometimes people have a garden overarching metaphor. Mm. Sometimes people have a musical overarching metaphor, but something that enables that a transcendent connection as to how all of this fits together. And there are certainly theologies which are explicit. There are theologies which are implicit. You only find out what you believe when you see how you behave, almost.
Yes. What does this look like? You know, can you give some examples about, you know, somebody has come with this situation, you know, and this is how we help them, or could you tell us a few stories to help us just get into this?
So sometimes people just need space to rest first. I think that's one of the big advantages of seeing people in a residential setting, that people often need to rest before they can even collect their thoughts, and to have a couple of days to come down to potter, to connect. There's a lot to be said for, I think as Ernest Rossi talked about, exercise, novelty, and numinosum as being the preconditions for neurogenesis. So for the development of new neural connections, you need these ingredients. We've got three chapels at Sheldon. They're all very different in their character, just a place to sit. We have a labyrinth so people can it's a very interesting healing space, the labyrinth, for walking that. It's a Chartres model. Mm. We have an art shed which is just stuffed with things to go and play with. We call it messy play for grown-ups. So, you know, you don't have to have any particular skill. And there's lots in everything from sort of Lego to plasticine to crayons to, you know, proper artistic materials. And one of the things we've been building up over the last couple of years has been having artists in residence here fairly regularly, and just finding that thing that's accessible for people. There's been so many times when people have been almost mute. They haven't had any words. It's just been, they've just known that they need to sort of land at Sheldon, and almost people have been speechless, and just create again just that holding, containing space that just enables people to unwind and then sort of ravel up these sort of layers and layers and layers that people are negotiating. Surprisingly often people will say, that's the first time that I've told the whole story. You know, they might have sort of told a bit to the GP or a bit to the bishop or a bit to their spiritual director or whatever, but we do really try to bring the whole person, you know, physical health and mental health and spiritual health, and be supporting and integrating the whole thing. Yeah. People are very often in very high vigilance. Something has gone wrong. I think the high vigilance of just being in a unknown and dangerous and risky situation with the pandemic has just raised all of our baseline anxiety levels, and our threat detector is just sort of always on the lookout for, you know, what bad thing is going to happen next. Am I safe? And creating an environment where there are sufficient signals of safety for the body and mind to enable the body and mind to relax. And we have a reasonably controlled environment here at Sheldon up to a point, but when people are leaving, you know, where are they going? You know, vicarages and manses, you know, they're very often not very private places.
But Sarah, can I ask, so if people are arriving to you from situations of stress, and sometimes really sadly and unfortunately it's the church itself that's causing these problems, whether that's abuse or bullying or some other way that the situation of their Christian life is causing them to burn out. They believe they're called by God, yet in this situation, they've been completely broken apart by the experience. So can you speak to that a little bit?
One of the things that I'm quite often talking with people about is how the stress response works. Mm. And one of the things is when the threat has come in almost under your radar from a quarter that you didn't expect it, sometimes people have that experience of feeling that their response is so out of proportion to what they can see as what they're reacting to, and it feels quite mad when you're in that situation, or either mad or pathetic, and sometimes really picking apart the components of the stress response. David Rock does a good one, which is SCARF, which is a nice acronym, so status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness. And sometimes I'll tell people's story back to them using those headlines and saying, you know, your Stone Age brain thinks that these are matters of life and death, these things that are happening to you. Mm. So your 21st century sophisticate brain says, well, this is, you know, not much, I can handle it. But if we look at it from your Stone Age brain, it is saying this is a matter of life and death. This is why your stress response has been so actively triggered. And sometimes that can be a way in for helping people. But one of the things that I'd really like to learn and understand more about is this sort of whole field of evolving field of moral injury. Mm. Partly because I think we're going through a national experience of that when our leaders don't care whether we live or die, but also within a church framework where it was why we got so involved with the clergy discipline measure, because we could see that people were being harmed and injured by the very fabric of the church.
Yes. Could you just define moral injury slower, just in case people haven't heard of it before, because that's quite a new term, I imagine, for many people, or moral health and moral injury.
And I'm not going to be able to define it because I haven't got it written down in front of me.
But just in general, say it again slower, because it's really important.
So moral injury being when you are harmed in a high stakes environment, and when people in legitimate leadership positions have not fulfilled their proper duty of care towards you, and that is a whole additional layer, really, in terms of cynicism and demoralization and PTSD. There's a whole sort of complex of stuff around that I really think we need, and that's me personally as well as we as a church and as a society, we need to learn and understand an awful lot more about this.
Can I ask, Sarah, again, maybe a bit more personally, you over many years have been in Sheldon receiving, helping to heal, sending back in, you know, umpteen people involved in ministry. So the stuff you must have heard. How do you? I remember being a Sheldon and I was having a tough time with having had a very difficult experience in the parish. And outside my window, I was in one of your beautiful little sheds. There was flocks of people about to be ordained. And I think I even said to you, I'm like, how do you not run out? I wanted to say, are you sure? Have you guys thought about this? Have you got a plan? Are you sure? So you're doing the rescuing and with the help of God, people who are having a tough time. And last week you said you had ordinands and so on. You know, yes. How do you as a Christian keep on keeping on with being within the body of Christ Church?
Oh, what a lovely question. I think the people that we meet are so amazing. I mean, one of the reasons we wrote Affirmation and Accountability 20 years ago was because we thought there was such a pernicious narrative going around of, like, you know, oh, if we only, you know, did our selection processes right and ordained the right people, you know, there wouldn't be any, you know, these are the wrong people who've been ordained, you know. And actually, so many of the people who come to us, you know, they're the best. Honestly, they so are the best. And and hearing people's stories and their, I would say I learn as much every time I sit down for an hour with somebody. I learn as much as I hopefully share, teach, and give as well. So I think that immense privilege of being allowed into people's lives at these significant moments is, I mean, way back when my original training was medicine, and it has that sort of same as, you know, the privilege of being in a labor ward, you know, of when somebody's, you know, giving birth, the privilege of accompanying somebody who's dying, you know, these are liminal moments. And, and there is a real sense of when people are stressed, distressed, breaking down, there's that sense of also opportunity and remaking. And I don't want to over egg that, because I say it's not pretty, and it's not comfortable, but you know, these are phases and seasons of life, and navigating those seasons of life is it goes on being amazing. It goes on being amazing.
Well, I thank God that you're there for people when the season of life is a little bit tricky. I guess people can find out, if they listen to this and want to find out more, you've got your website. There we'll put all the details on the episode notes. But if someone, Sarah, is listening today and just feeling, you know, we've got burned out, which is, you know, deeply distressing period of life. A lot of people are just feeling a bit singed out. I'm not going to claim a credit. Somebody who's on our Burn Like Stars course at the moment came up with this phrase, which I love, a bit singed, you know, a bit tattered around the edges. What can you give them, or actually all of us, what positive, what one thing can we do today if we're feeling a bit singed out?
I think there's a huge amount to be said for allowing yourself to be seen and heard by somebody you trust. So that sort of goes a little bit back to your sort of, you know, what you were talking about the, you know, how hard I'm working, how blessed I am, that actually allowing ourselves to be seen and heard by somebody we trust is incredibly important. Gratitude, delight, seeing. So just taking time to be in the present moment and noticing. I don't know about you, but I'm always worrying about what's past or what's in the future. actually in the present is an important corrective and space to be there. And things that are soft and warm and kind and green and beautiful, they all matter. They all matter.
Sarah, thank you so much. It's been a joyful time to spend with you today, to sort of benefit for some of your wisdom and your stories and the seasonality kind of approach to life. I do thank God for your work in Sheldon. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today on the Go Health podcast. And I ask that God will bless you and your ministry and for everyone in the community there in the years to come.
Well, it's lovely to chat, and thank you for inviting us.
Thank you. So we are picking up the conversation over in the Go Health community. And if you are not a member, this is the moment to join. You can join entirely for free up until the end of November, and you can experience all of our brand new resourcing for burnout. The burnout season is called Burn Like Stars, and it's our gift to you, and really everyone is welcome. So thank you to Rosie Dawson, who produced this episode, and huge thanks to Wendy Lloyd from the Go Health team for all her work on this series. And thank you to you for listening. I hope you will check out the next episode. I'm also excited about this. I'm excited about every episode. But the next one, I am chatting with another really interesting person called Bruce Stanley, who has created an approach to self-care that's all about crafting flourishing. It's called Day Crafting. And it's another wise voice that we can all lean into to help us to flourish faithfully. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. It makes a huge difference to us.